It's the twilight of your lifetime, and you know the end is near.
Gotta find her and remind her why she's waited all these years.
She was age is just a number.
Welcome back to Bachelor of Hearts Presents Senior Studies, the Golden Bachelor podcast that's asking the question. Remember from the thing? And now I have a question as well, which I also thought of. Max, what's your talent? If you had to pick one, what's your talent?
Yeah, clairvoyance.
Oh, okay.
You
talk to me about
that.
You
are wearing a yellow shirt right now.
How did you know that?
I know.
That's crazy.
I'm really good at it.
You know what's funny is, like, this is probably... I mean, I don't know, but I don't know if they can tell whether we are or are not in the room together. Because, like, we've been doing Zoom podcasts, you know, now and then since the COVID situation all started. I can't tell if they can register whether or not... So our listeners must be thinking you're sitting there and looking directly at me and seeing what kind of T-shirt I'm wearing. In which case... Well, that's not true, actually. We're miles apart right now. Yes, listeners, we are recording on Zoom today, so my friend Max would have absolutely no idea of what color T-shirt I'm wearing.
Not a chance. There's no way that I can see you.
Yes, that's right. As we all know, the Zoom technology is an audio-only. Why bother keeping up this artifice?
Hasn't quite extended yet to the realm of videography.
They can get there. My name's Xavier Obetsky Noonan. I love The Bachelor. I once won a talent competition by playing the bass guitar part to Green Day's Brain Stew on keyboard.
Okay.
If you're not familiar with that song, it is the same song, the same like five notes over and over, and it is like a doo 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 doo, like over and over again. And I was only familiar with that song because it was on the Godzilla soundtrack, and the version on the Godzilla soundtrack has a lot of Godzilla noises in it. And I, that's my.
Did you do the Godzilla noises along with it?
I definitely did in rehearsal. I don't think I brought that to the big stage.
Didn't bring it quite to the stage. And so this was you at 24, 25, how old?
Yeah, this was 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Joining me, as always, behind the microphone, behind the veil of invisibility, someone I cannot see, someone who I'm not making eye contact with as he shakes his head. It is, of course, my co-host, Max Quinn. How are you, Max?
Listeners, g'day. Talent shows, look, actually when I was in year seven, wait, no, when I was seven, this is different, I auditioned for the Ballina boy band.
Oh my gosh. How is there a Ballina boy band and we've never talked about it before?
Yeah, this is crazy. This is like a dormant memory that my friend Alex, who also tried out, reminded me of the other week, where he was like, do you remember we met in the Ballina industrial estate when we were children because we were both precocious and our parents tried to get us into a boy band? And I was like, yes, I do. Mm. And he was like, and do you remember how we both got kicked out of the boy band because neither of us could dance?
That is, yeah, I mean, that's pretty
crucial.
They
put you through the choreography. They were going to take this boy band on tour. They were going to be the biggest thing.
You know what's funny is if this were to be one of those many boy bands that started on Zoom that we all heard about through the pandemic,
yes,
it wouldn't have mattered because no one could see whether or not you were dancing. Because as we
that's
know,
right,
Zoom,
yeah,
of course, has no video component.
It's so hard to get NSYNC with each other.
Yeah, that's right. Would you like to do an acknowledgement of country, Max?
Yes, yes. Look, hello. We are recording on the unceded lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. This always was, this always will be, this remains Aboriginal land. This has been a trying week for many, I am certain, and just on behalf of the show, our solidarity, our friendship, our love to First Nations Australian Bachelor of Hearts listeners, to our friends in the First Nations community, g'day. Sorry.
Yeah, we're absolutely. If you're listening from overseas, we mentioned this referendum briefly this week following a very fraught campaign Millions of Australians voted against the referendum to recognise First Nations people in the Constitution. And you might detect a shift in the mood.
An air of deflation.
Internationally. It's hard not to be a little demoralized by this, like, just overwhelmingly negative result and wasted opportunity.
It's quite flattening.
It is a little, but there is some hope that beyond the misinformation and cowardice and racism and whatever other elements, you know, people will be talking about, there's hope that the referendum is also, or, you know, the conversation is generating some momentum for other action, and we don't have to talk about it too much on our Bachelor podcast, but, like, since we've been talking about it, now is a great time to demonstrate a long-term commitment to paying the rent and addressing, you know, intergenerational privilege and taking steps towards equality and, yeah.
Yeah, like, that's kind of the conversation here. Like, it's not over. This this fight for Indigenous land rights in this country is ongoing, and for the recognition of First Nations Australians right around... what they called Terra Nullius. What a fucking colonialist bloody shit. Yeah. Anyway, look.
Should we get into Palestine, or should we get on with the show?
Let's get on with the show.
Okay. Has it been an okay week otherwise? I don't know if we even want to get into that, really.
Things are fine. Let's keep talking about The Bachelor.
We're cramming in this episode in a pretty short amount of time. I've also been sick. We're both very busy doing a bunch of stuff. The most important... It's basically, I would say, our generation-defining cultural... Like, you know, a few generations back, they had Woodstock, you know? And then there was, like, Live Aid and stuff like that. And now here we are in the midst of something that I think is just as important... which is, of course, the first and last, probably, South by Southwest.
No, I think this has legs.
Well, people are trying their best.
I think it'll be good.
Anyway, so we got to try and get this podcast out as quickly as we can. Max looks nervous.
No, I'm fine.
Okay. How would I know that? I can't see
you
my friend Max.
You couldn't see me. I'm a ghost. Absolutely not.
I think we should get straight into the recap. How about you?
I love it.
Because you know what? We watched a pretty damn good episode of TV this week, and it was truly one of the bright spots. I could also tell you about the episode of The Bachelor in Paradise that I watched this week, which has continued to air directly after Golden Bachelor, and I know you haven't been watching, Max. This week's episode centered on one of the women who has been on the beach for 9 days now and has not done a poo. And I tell you, there was two straight episodes of way less, you know, interesting stuff happening than that. It did it kind of called back in some way a little bit to the Jamie Piss saga, just in terms of, like, someone either doing too much or doing too little of some kind of bodily excretion or whatever, you know.
That's my favorite stuff. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for telling me about this.
Yeah, yeah. So it truly went for most of the episode, because I'm sensing from this season they don't have a lot to work with, really. And so they were delighted when this came in their lap.
That's comfy.
Yeah, exactly. Came up. And they had a medical expert come in and tell this woman that she had to have movement by sunrise, or they would be forced to take drastic other measures.
Oh my God.
This was one of the great, ring-ins, the great, like, bystanders who get a guest spot on The Bachelor, you know, that I've ever seen. Well, he described the process that would perhaps become necessary that he had performed in emergency rooms and stuff like that elsewhere, which was delivering what he called a poo baby. And the term poo baby was said so many times. A little tickled by it, but also, like, when that's the high point of the series so far, it does make me feel pretty glad that we are getting some, like, good, genuine connection and, like, you know, emotional stuff and drama between people that you actually care about on The Golden Bachelor.
I'm more invested in Poogate suddenly, and I will definitely be tuning in for this episode, if not the rest of this season.
Okay, well, the Poogate is locked.
It's high stakes shit here on the Bachelor of Hearts podcast.
Absolutely. But let's talk about The Golden Bachelor, season one, episode three. And we open on a shot of Gary crying. It lasts 10 seconds. There's a tinkly minor key piano melody that plays over the end of it. And I'm still fascinated by this little micro teaser, you know, which evidently I think they're going to try and do in each episode.
I think it's smart.
Me too. And like last week I was focusing on the fact that it doesn't go for a minute and a half, which I think is an integral part of it. But also just the fact that it's there, it's like, it's interesting how it puts you in a certain mood leading into each episode. I wonder if it will just be a clip of the most dramatic thing that happens each episode, or whether it will be like a mood setter for the entire tone of the episode to come.
Out of curiosity, are they doing it for Bachelor in Paradise as well? And did they do the poo baby scene?
No, Bachelor in Paradise, I think probably because it's 2 hours.
Yeah.
They're doing the much more traditional, like, here are 20 things that will happen on this episode all cut together.
Right.
They are doing, and I'm sorry to, anyone who is watching Bachelor in Paradise has already seen this image 100 times and has it burned into their retinas like I do. They are illustrating the poo baby, what needs to happen with the poo baby, so to speak, by showing a shot in, I guess, slow motion, although maybe it is just the nature of the beast, of a turtle sticking its head out of its shell. It's really vivid. It's just something that will forever haunt me.
Sounds like this episode was made for me.
Yeah, Max, I do think, you could probably skip the first 2 episodes without too much trouble and just jump in for what I guess we are calling Poo Gate, Poo Baby Gate. Mm. Poo Gamergate? Is that something? I hope not.
Isn't that baby girl gamer bathwater? I don't know.
I'm not sure. Not sure if that was a baby.
No, it was girl gamer. She sold her bathwater.
That's right. Yeah. Yes. Girlgate,
coming up on the Bachelor of Hearts podcast. Chicks, what's with them?
What's going on there? Except these ones are old. They're not babies.
Yeah. There's a real generational shift happening here on the show.
Certainly. Yeah, I like this little, we spend 10 seconds just going, why is the nice man crying? And then that's all it needs to be. And then we start the episode.
Yeah.
So sexy dancer Leslie narrates that there are 12 women left and the vibe is camaraderie, but we have to protect our hearts. And so 4 of the women comprising Susan Jenner, every month is April, Nancy, who was the subject of last week's micro teaser, and Kathy, gather together. They have a girl chat outside and they discuss how some of the women unnamed seemingly behave very differently the minute Gary is around. Kathy says it's like the 3 faces of Eve. Of course, Max, you remember this film, the 1957 multiple personality disorder drama that won Joanne Woodward an Academy Award.
I genuinely thought this was something from the Bible.
You know what, actually, I don't know the Bible well enough to say that that title isn't a reference to the Bible.
I might have, like, I went to Catholic school for my entire life.
Am I wrong?
I might have missed it.
I don't know. Yeah, well, who knows? Okay, somebody write in. Didn't get time to watch that movie this week. And I truly, on any other week, I would have been like, a movie was mentioned? I'd better watch it.
Let's go.
Yeah. Kathy ITMs, this morning, we decided we needed to form a group. I guess.
Great.
Uh-huh.
A coalition, if
sure.
you will.
Yeah, they've unionized. We finally figured out that we could have Askin, A for April, S for Susan, K for Kathy, and N for Nancy. And our motto is, you're Askin, we're telling.
Oh, I love that.
It's good, but also, what is going on here?
Now, this part of it, I don't understand. I just think that these are the four best friends who have formed in the house. And they've said, we're a group. A group needs a name.
Mm. Do you think as Bachelor contestants, you are stronger as a group? I think I've always advocated that all of them should unionize and argue for better conditions.
Yes.
But to splinter off like this just feels like it might encourage some infighting, which of course does end up happening.
You need the majority, I think, unless you are...
Right.
Establishing that you are the one and only true faction, you're leaving yourself vulnerable to a larger group forming. And
it reminds me of the dynamics in a season of Survivor.
So, to a certain extent, yes. You need to bring in a fifth.
Interesting. Are you applying for that role? Maskin? I will.
Yeah.
Good that we got the anti-vaxxer out, because she might be anti-Maskin as well.
Yeah, she's probably not into that.
What they're saying is, so their slogan, which it's important to have a slogan. Look, all of this to say, like, I think it's good to have branding, I think, and particularly, like, when they leave the show and they're on social media or whatever. Like, I mean, this is the traditional thinking. I don't know how much this applies to Golden Bachelor, but, like, they can then continue to be in each other's posts. You know, this may continue to provide benefits for them for the long run. But I don't get the motto. The motto is, you're asking, we're telling. But they just said that they're asking. So I'm... Who's asking? And what are they asking exactly?
Well, you're asking, Xavier, and they're telling.
No, they're on first.
No, Xavier, I'm asking.
Uh-huh.
We're moving on.
Okay. I like the maximizing the joint slay. I'm not not certain I understand the mission statement. I imagine this will become clear probably in the next episode. Jesse Palmer, 44, host, arrives to tell the women there will be a one-on-one date later, but they're all invited to the group date, which will start straight away, and it's going to be a talent show. And, of course, we know many of these women are dancers and singers and dental hygienists, but... Rockland Maryland Joan is worried. She ITM saying, I don't really have any talents. And I'm like, babe, that never stopped anybody on a Bachelor talent show group date before. I don't know why it should stop
mattering. Bachelor podcast, let's be real.
That's right. Exactly. Also, if you've been listening to this podcast, you will know that Joan actually is very talented because she manages to live in two different lands at one time.
This was my first point of cognizance of Joan. I know that there was maybe a clip of her in a recent episode where Joan might have had a confessional towards the end, but this is the first time where I really felt like, now who's this? I'm about to sink my teeth in here.
Yeah, she hasn't properly popped, I think, until this point, apart from me finding out where she lives. I feel like I need to confess something, which is I have found out that despite the world's funniest running joke that Joan lives in Rockland, Maryland, I think I maybe misread something at some point along the way.
Oh my God, please say more.
She says later in this episode she's from Rockville, Maryland.
Oh my God.
I was so embarrassed. I was like, can I hide it? Are enough of our listeners watching the show as well? Or can I just keep going with what we all agree is one of the funniest bits in the history of this show?
I think this is a really good bit that you could continue to... you could continue to squeeze juice from this stone for a long time.
Yeah. Look, I think, the honest thing to do... Like, I had to go with my heart. I had to fess up here. But with your permission and perhaps with the grace of our listeners, I am going to pretend that she is in fact still from Rockland, Maryland. Maybe she's got two houses. And I did
one in Rockland.
One in Rockland, one in Rockville. And I did look up, and Rockville is like a city that has a Wikipedia page, and Rockland, it does not seem to exist. But
oh my God.
I can dream, okay?
Hello to you if you are listening to us from Rockland, but if you are from Rockville, up yours.
Is Rockland, I'm just realizing, maybe a location that they visit in one of the Flintstones movies? And it's not the month for it, which is the fucked part. Anyway, let's talk about this group date. It is
the month
a talent
for it
show.
Is April.
Every month. Every month is Flintstones month. So just quickly, it's 4 minutes into the episode and we're on stage. Like, we are not messing around. I've said this before. We're not sitting around with contestants, like, rubbing their foreheads with, like, notepads in their hands for 20 minutes, like, trying to work out, you know, what they're going to write.
Wait.
You're making a face. What's going on, Max?
Rockland is a historic home located on Falls Road in Baltimore County, Maryland. It is a 2.5-story Greek Revival influenced house consisting of 3 bay-wide main blocks, constructed in 1837 with 2 telescoping additions. It was listed on the National Register of Historic Places in 1983. Would you like to see a picture of it?
Sure, why not? So I'm thrilled to learn that it is the name of a place, although it is seemingly the name of a house. Is that right?
We found Joan's address.
So we're doxing Joan. And in fact, even if we delete this part of this podcast, we've been doxing her for a couple of weeks now.
This is true.
There's no going back from that. Lord knows I'm not going back to edit an old episode.
Absolutely not. Rockland, Maryland lives.
Okay. I'm extremely relieved.
Look, the only reason, of course, listeners, that we would go back and edit an old episode is if we were being sued for, let's say, copyright infringement. And on an unrelated note, hello to our friends from Warner Music.
Oh, yeah. Hello. This is so funny. And I didn't think we would talk about this, but it turns out Justin Bieber is a fan. And he was listening, going back through some of the older episodes from a couple of years ago, and he was so tickle pink that he heard one of his own songs there that he was telling his agents and lawyers about it, like being like, can you believe it? I've been asking to go on the show all this time, and I didn't even know that I was on it without even realizing.
12 seconds of my song.
One syllable in an episode from 2 years ago. And, you know, the lawyers didn't really have a great sense of humor about it, apparently. So episode 99 is under construction. We'll be back in our feed shortly.
It's not like Rockland, Maryland house, is it?
No, absolutely not. Rockland, Maryland house is standing strong, just like
it's
every other episode.
Brooklynville.
In what?
Brooklynville.
Brook whatville?
Brooklandville.
Hang on a second. What?
Rockland is in Brooklandville.
You telling me she lives in freaking 3 lands?
I got 3 lands for you. We are so far above sea level.
9 lands, but a bitch ain't one. Okay.
All right, let's land the plane.
Yes, all right. So joining Gary and Jesse Palmer, 44 host, as a judge for the talent show is iconic Bachelor Nation personality Caitlin Bristow. Are you familiar with Caitlin, Max? I know you are not
Was she a bachelorette?
Yes, she was. So she started as a contestant on Chris Soule's season 19 of The Bachelor. Then she was the lead of Bachelorette season 11. And then alongside ex-Bachelorette Tayshia Adams, she also co-hosted seasons 17 and 18 of The Bachelorette in the immediate wake of Chris Harrison's removal prior to the full-time appointment of Jesse Palmer, 44 host. I have not seen her seasons. That was just before I started watching US Bachelor. And now I've been watching all of them from the beginning. So that will be the last one I see before I catch up again. But it's lovely to see her. I think it's particularly lovely to see the cross-pollination between this. Because you have to remember, the Golden Bachelor is a spin-off, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it becomes more legitimate. You know, obviously, because we're talking about it, it's the most legitimate product that the Bachelor Nation is putting out. But I like to see that both of these worlds are coexisting and feeding each other, you know? But I do have to say, almost exactly the moment she was introduced, Caitlin blends into the background. I don't think they capitalized on her being there at all. Did you learn anything about her?
Well, I didn't learn anything about her during the course of the episode, but I did just learn something about her now. And I'd like to share my condolences to Caitlin Bristow on her recent separation from Jason Tartik.
Yeah, that's actually a huge deal in American Bachelor. Yeah, well, they were engaged for a long time.
That's a shame.
And they were brought back frequently as like, this is proof that Bachelor is good and stuff, you know. So they're familiar faces.
Hi, Jason.
If it were me, because it is a talent show, like, as much as I like having Caitlin there, I think it's good for the show. They maybe would have got a little more juice out of bringing back the most talented person in Bachelor franchise history. I think you know who I'm talking about. Michael Todd from Listen to Your Heart.
Oh my God, they should have brought back Michael Todd.
Don't you think? Wouldn't this have been a nice opportunity to have him sing the name of his song, which of course we all remember?
I think it was called like Hot Funk or something like that. It was like that.
Hot, like
Hot Night?
Hot Baby? There's no way it was Hot Baby. Hot
Michael
Hot Chance?
Todd,
no.
Hot Night.
Hot Boogie? No. Hot Touch. Hot Touch.
Hot Touch. Hot Touch. Thank you.
Yes. Yes. Of course. Yeah. Well, we needed the reminder and it wasn't there for us. So that's one disappointment. Maybe the low point of the Golden Bachelor so far. Anyway, maybe Michael Todd would have overshadowed the women. You know, maybe they made a calculated choice. Like,
this is true.
There's no way they'll stand up to that. The talent show winner will get to have dinner with Gary after the show. Just realized that rhymed. More on rhyming later. Sandra from Atlanta is up first. She insists she's not a comedian, but she does a pretty great stand-up bit. Do you remember this?
I thought this was good. I was laughing. Pretty clever, sort of like you're the host of a wedding and it turns out you've got jokes kind of situation.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was like okay. Sandra's not mucking around, you know?
We can work with this.
And I think Sandra has had a good sense of humor throughout. You know, she's been very gently sprinkled in, but she seems to be a good, colorful narrator and one to decorate the show with, you know? Susan Jenner appears with a headband on and karate kicks through a piece of wood held up by Gary. Very cool.
Hell yeah.
Fucking badass to be like, yeah, I got a skill. Find me a little block of wood. Ellen says, my talent is teaching sex ed to middle school students. And I want this side of the room to repeat after me, a hoo-ha is a vagina.
Great.
A great line. A fun line. Is she teaching middle schoolers from the 1930s?
I think that she might be.
Are people saying hoo-ha these days?
I think people are just like calling it their full-out C words at this point,
yes.
Right?
Or maybe middle in America. Maybe in America not so much. I know there's still some scandal around that, but like, yeah, I think middle schoolers are like, you know, aware. Let's not talk too much about middle schoolers' genitals, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. Yeah,
that's the end of the show.
Thanks so
much
for listening,
everybody. We've got to go goodbye forever.
Yeah, none of my business. First impression, Faith sings and plays her Gretsch White Falcon again. Kathy does push-ups again. Pretty sick. Nancy is billed as a whipped cream catcher. I couldn't quite tell exactly what that was, but the crowd went absolutely nuts for whatever she was doing there. Every month is April is billed as a beatnik and does some like inspirational spoken word poetry.
I don't understand what this was.
Well, I don't know either, but I kind of liked it. I think April is just one of those people who like can sell anything she does with charisma and personality and like, you know,
the other
with
two.
Her eyes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
She says, we have power. We are loved. There's no age. No, there's always Botox. And I'm like, it's not like one of those rhyming poems, but she's not so deep in an impression of some kind of beatnik character or whatever that you lose the April of it. Like she is
That's
being
right.
herself. I enjoyed this. And then Gary clearly does too, because he goes, yeah, that's what I'm talking about right there. I've just realized my Gary has become like
it's
season one Homer Simpson. Let's go out for some frosted chocolate milkshakes.
Come here, boy.
Right. I think part of it is because I've been a bit sick this week.
Right.
Yeah. Sexy dancer Leslie does what everybody agrees is a sexy dance. She wears two fluoro boas. She dances out into the crowd. She pulls Gary up on stage where she sits him down, continues dancing. And then once he gets up, she pulls up his seat to reveal a plate of biscuits saying, but wait, I bake too.
I liked that.
That's primo. That takes planning.
I thought that was really, really good.
Because, like, obviously, everybody knows she's a sexy dancer. She probably walks into this date being like, well, I'm probably going to win. I'm a sexy dancer. I'm going to do a sexy dance. Everybody likes it when I sexy dance. That's why my name is Sexy Dancer.
Elton John wrote the song about me.
That's right. Exactly. Joan is up next. She ITMs, this is not my thing. We're seeing a lot of this through Joan's perspective. She's worried. She feels like she's got no skill. She's got no talent. She tells the audience she's out of her comfort zone, but she's written a poem for Gary entitled, quote, "I just hope I don't vomit on your shoes."
Oh, and I loved this.
Again, I'm sensing it feels almost wrong to do the Jamie Pierce speech here because it is sort of the undercurrent of this poem.
It's really beautiful. I thought this was the coolest shit.
The poem's great. Should I just read the poem?
Just read the poem. I really thought that this was pretty, like...
It was, like, genuinely...
Pretty on the nose. I understand that we were sort of set up for it as well. Like, that's the other part of this where the show has manipulated us in such a way to be like, oh, this talentless woman actually does have talent.
Right.
But in this case, I was fully won over and believed every word.
Yeah, and I feel like if they had played it the other way and been like, look at this weirdo who wrote a strange poem and they played the dumb music over it, I would have still been like, that wasn't so bad.
It was all right.
The limo finally came to a stop and they told me to get out. Really? Gary's that many steps away? Is all I could shout. A long, tight dress and 4-inch heels that already started to hurt. My only goal was to reach Gary without planting myself in the dirt. Now each time I get the chance to talk with our sweet Gary, my hands shake a little less because he makes things not so scary.
That was so beautiful.
So as I stand here today without a talent to expose, I recite this poem to you, Gary, because I really just want another rose. I hope you can see that being on this stage could really give me the blues, and you'll give me some extra points for just not vomiting on your shoes. It's nice.
I found this so charming.
I think it's genuinely one of the better poems I've heard on this show.
Yeah, me too.
Gary says, I felt like she was just talking to me and no one else was around, you know? And of course, Joan is Gary's pick for a private dinner. Sexy dancer Leslie narrates this announcement in ITM, giving us her POV, and she says, I'm really happy it's Joan, but I can also be disappointed for myself. At the end of the day, no one ever picks me. But tonight, I actually thought, I have this. I'm not just like, you know, sexy dancer.
This, to me, is the start of an arc for Leslie, I think. Like, she's not pick me in quite the way that Gen Z would describe someone as being pick me, but the humbleness with which she handles this, and if you recall last week, she also didn't get the costume that she wanted.
Yes,
and she
that's
was
true.
Okay with that. And both times she sort of said, look, I'm allowed to be happy for the other woman, but I'm disappointed for myself. And I've been really impressed both times by listening to Leslie describe this, but this time we get the window into the soul, and I don't know, I can't help but like her more because of it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's something that they're trying on her a little bit, you know, like not giving her everything. And it's funny that that's a producing tactic that we've seen a lot of times before. And I feel like sometimes it's really effective in bringing out the absolute worst in that person. And Leslie is kind of just refusing to go down that path.
She's great. She's doing
at
really
least
well
for the time being. So Joan gets the extra time. Joan and Gary sit at a table with some plates of pasta. You'll never believe how much of it they eat. Joan says that Gary's obviously super handsome, and it's been a few years since his partner's death, so has he done any dating? And he says, after about a year's time after Tony passed away, I thought, okay, everybody says a year is the magic number, and you get out there and get going as if it's like, okay, I've served my year, it's time. It doesn't work like that, does it? And Joan says, I loved being married, so I tried to start dating after like a year, and I think maybe I tried to find it a little too soon. But I'm at 2.5 years now, and I feel like I'm ready. And there's sort of a pivot here where she brings up this other thing, which is that, quote, I had a really hard time leaving home. I have a lot of responsibilities back home. I have a daughter that just had a baby 15 days ago. A C-section, not an easy delivery, not an easy baby. But for the first time in my life, I think I'm going to do something for myself because I think I'm ready. And the vibes are great and they're wholesome and they're sweet. And Gary takes her by the hand, proposes a toast to her saying, I want to tell you that I'm as excited to be spending time with you as I've ever been with anyone. So here's to you and here's to a future. Gary produces a rose, which she accepts. They kissed, and like the prevailing emotion for me, at least, was like, Joan is a dark horse contender. We might have, you know, dismissed. We might not have really, you know, she hasn't popped like this, as you were saying, until now. Maybe we cast her aside because of the location differences. Like, obviously, Gary lives in Indiana, whereas Joan lives in three different lands. Can you believe it?
Do you know, we were talking during this episode, not you and I, my girlfriend and I, and she was like, oh, maybe Joan could win. And my initial instinct being pilled by this show was, she wasn't featured in the first episode. There's no way that she can win.
Right.
And my girlfriend said, like, well, what if this is different? And I thought, you know what? Maybe you're right. They are taking a lot of different approaches this season to what I understand to be a conventional American Bachelor approach.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you're right. But then...
It's interesting that you bring that up, because I, in my spreadsheet, wrote down which of the women got intro videos in that first episode, just to keep track. And at this point, like, as of the end of this episode, there are three women remaining who did not have an intro video. And all of the women who had an intro video are still remaining. So it is, like, you know, the thing that we always assume to be true.
It's a signifier.
Right. Well, what of Joan, though? We come back to the commercial break to see Joan taking a phone call. We only see her side... Joan call? We only hear her side of the conversation, but it's pretty clear what's going on. And she says, I just got your message, sweetie. How did you sleep last night? I thought if I let this go long enough, you were going to figure it out. But I know that you're really hurting now because you wouldn't have sent that message. So I'm figuring this out today, all right? And she ITMs that, quote, once you become a mom, you're always a mom, even when you're older. Nothing is more important. And moments later, she is breaking it to the other women that she has to go back and be with her family. She tears up as she tells them, I selfishly came here to do this, and my heart is breaking that I'm leaving. I found this quite hard to watch. Like, the amount that it seemed like she was sort of beating herself up so much for doing it in the first place.
I was mad at Joan's kid.
For having a baby.
And grandkid for being so difficult, quite frankly.
That's true.
And for taking her away from us, because she's clearly compelling television. This narrative around her was quite good. The poem was good.
Mm.
And while I also think that she might have saved herself some trouble in the long run, I don't know. I felt like there might have been something there for Gary and for Joan.
Yeah, it is. It's probably something that they will always be like, oh yeah, I wonder what might have happened with that. But
what,
like,
if?
That's life, isn't it? Sometimes a baby gets born and you have to go stand near it and go, oh, your mum's got to have a lie down. Let me look after you, little, what's that? What were we saying? Hot baby before?
Hot middle school baby.
Strange.
Classic
episode.
Michael Todd song.
Yeah, when we don't have a guest in here, sometimes the it just gets a little out of control. Susan, who it was implied was kind of close with Joan, ITMs, my heart's breaking. I know how bad she wanted to be here. I can't imagine, especially after having the date and having got the rose. It makes it even harder for her. And we cut across to Gary looking incredibly cheerful in the backseat of a car as he's being driven to a one-on-one date. He ITMs, I woke up this morning feeling like $1 million. I'm very hopeful going forward. I don't expect problems. I only expect to build that connection, and it's a nice feeling.
This poor, sweet chump.
Rule number one of reality show, of going on and sitting in front of a chair to do an ITM, I think, rule number one is, when they ask you to say, what could possibly go wrong? Don't say
something
what
has already gone
wrong. You're about to find out some bad news, and it's only going to get worse.
This was great. Like, it's almost like watching reality TV for the first time.
Yeah.
But I don't know, through someone else's eyes. Like, Gary has no idea about how this production works.
Yeah.
You and I are sitting here going, this is a slow motion car crash.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure it plays equally well for crusty old reality diehards like you and I, and also the lots of people who I imagine are watching this season as their first one of these types of shows, you know? He arrives at the mansion where Joan is waiting for him out the front, and they sit down on a bench, and Joan begins by thanking him for the night before. Our connection was so deep, and it's the first time that's happened to me since my husband passed away. I almost feel like if we're doing a Golden Bachelor drinking game, something being for the first time since their husband or whatever.
Oh my God. Yeah.
It's kind of a grim one, but it is a real theme. For the first time, I was envisioning a life with someone else, and I felt like it healed my heart a lot, honestly. But the things that were kind of playing along at home haven't been getting any better, and I got a text this morning, and I think I need to go back and be a mom now. She begins to tear up, saying, as much as I don't want to leave, I don't want to leave our journey. I've got to be a parent. I've got to go home to my kids. And Gary looks so forlorn and upset for just a moment, but then he sort of pulls it all together and he says, I understand, but I can't tell you how disappointed I am. I was so excited this morning. I was out of bed dancing, but I'm not doing his voice. I forgot to do his voice. It would be too funny to be doing his voice here.
Yeah.
But there's a moral compass that we both share. And sometimes the right thing to do is the hardest. And this is like another genuinely moving moment of human emotion on this show. And again, like the producers don't seem like they're milking it too much either. Like there's a, there's a light touch, a sort of moderately temperate touch, I suppose, that they're using here. Although I will say after they parted ways, the camera does linger on Joan weeping in the backseat of the car in a slightly predictable Bachelor type of way.
Sure.
But they let her speak, and she's just as eloquent as she's proved to be, saying, I hope one of my good friends back there gets to spend their life with him because I think he's worth it. My heart maybe got a little bit fixed from Jerry. He helped. He's helped with the journey. Because as you get older, you get more invisible. Like you're not as significant as when you were young. Just hard, powerful truths. We see the full version of that opening shot of Gary crying on the bench. But then after a commercial break, he IDMs, I've absorbed and processed this news now, and it's time to move on.
Oh my God.
And we're just getting whiplash again. It feels a little bit sudden for something that they built up that much.
Right, right. And particularly if you're watching without commercial as you or I might be.
Right.
That is pretty striking, isn't it? Yeah. I do want to say the thing that Joan said about how a new fleeting relationship, even if it does end under circumstances like this, can be very healing. I don't know about you, but I feel like I've been in those situations in the past where you meet someone, you have a connection after you've come out of a thing, and it's not meant to be, but it's over quickly or whatever.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
And it changes your perspective. And
right, yeah.
I feel so happy for Joan to be able to find that healing.
Totally, yeah. And I think there's elements of like finding some validation and confidence from it, and then also being able to picture yourself doing that again and all these things. Yeah, really nice. Anyway, fashion designer Michael Costello arrives at the mansion and tells the gathered women, Gary called me and told me that tonight is a special date night for one lucky lady, so I'm here for Ellen. Did this happen overnight? Gary got on the phone, we're to believe, to his close personal friend, fashion designer Michael Costello, and was like, quick, get down here.
Now, Michael Costello, I feel like was a Project Runway guy.
Okay, yeah, I believe it. I'm not familiar, but I haven't watched that show, really.
I've watched a lot of it. I think that he was on there and then used to come back as a judge or something like that.
Right. And he was treasurer, I think, wasn't he? Was that right?
Yeah, he was the Australian.
He was the former treasurer of Australia. 1990s. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
Hello, Peter Costello.
That's one for the real heads.
Yeah.
Dickheads. Actually, I don't know. Was he okay? He probably sucked. I'm sure he sucked.
He sucked.
He was Howard's. He was Howard's correct. Treasurer, right? Yeah, okay. Yeah, fuck that guy. Isn't it funny when you know someone's name? D- Didn't he write a lot of great songs in the 1970s with his band, The Attractions?
Yep.
Is it The Attractions?
Yep. Now that's what happened. And his comedy duo as well with Abbott was really good.
Yeah.
Who is on first, just by the way?
I'm still trying to find out.
I'm telling.
What was his band? It was The Attractions. Thank God.
Yeah.
One time I saw Elvis Costello live at a music festival, and I camped out waiting to see him for so long, for many, many hours, because I knew I was going to have a great time. And I was so close to the front row that I was able to tell that at that period in human history, both Elvis Costello and I had the exact same glasses frames. And boy, there oh boy, was that validating enough to get me back into a new relationship.
Healing.
Mm-hmm. So Ellen and Michael Costello walk out together, and moments later it's revealed that this is what has come to be known as a pretty woman date. I think we've used this term before. She's getting a makeover, she's getting gifts, she's getting pampered, she's getting spoiled. We watch Ellen try on a few gowns. We watch Michael say, wow, wow, wow. And she leaves with what I thought was the worst of the three dresses we saw.
I didn't have an opinion.
Fair enough. I don't need to have one. Gary says she looks stunning, but what completed the look was the big smile on her face. This man is too pure for words.
You never fully dress without a smile.
That's right. And what is it? If you're about to leave the house, take one thing off, but make sure that it's not your smile, I think is that?
That's right. That's exactly right. Something borrowed, something smiled.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yep. Absolutely. And don't forget.
A stitch in time.
Don't
saves
forget
a smile.
To bring a towel and make sure it's smiling. Can we delete the episode? So, Ellen's single date. They are whisked off in some kind of stretch limo four-wheel drive monstrosity to what I can only describe as an outdoor batchy couch on top of a grassy hill. There is some sparkling wine, which they don't touch. They really just sit and chat. It's one of these things where it's like, I bet everyone's glad they spent however long they did in a car. Ellen asks about Gary's wedding day, and he says, I don't remember. And Ellen's like, oh, come on, because she, like me, assumes that he's being coy or trying to downplay what an important day that must have been for him. But he says, well, I look at the pictures and go, yep, that was a wonderful day. But I mean, yeah, that was 50 years ago. Which is funny.
Makes so much sense
to me. I mean,
yeah. Man, 72.
That's right, yeah. He goes, I remember we had no honeymoon. We were so poor that we would invite our parents for visits because we knew that they'd bring groceries.
Relatable.
Mm-hmm. But it was so good. It was pure. It was simple. Ellen says that she met her partner at a camp in the Catskills when they were 10 years old, and that led to a happy relationship that lasted 25 years. Max, can you please tell me about your Catskills?
Yeah. Well, Brian has a very matted fur at the moment for reasons that I can't understand, so I'm constantly having to untangle his medium-length fur because otherwise he gets dreadlocks. So
his
Jeff's skill
his
is
skill
sitting.
Is Brian's skill is cultural appropriation. And Brian has a skill that poor woman from Bachelor in Paradise clearly lacks.
This is exactly
so
right.
So we can't downplay the importance.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, look, this is it. Look, if it was 9 days between shits for poor Jeff, something would be terribly wrong.
Yes, I believe so. Maybe they could invite, it's probably too late now, but if they could bring Jeff on as a consultant, you know, to help out on this season of Paradise, things would go a lot smoother for everyone.
I think if they hired her as a consultant, that would be just right.
The pampering continues as Gary completes Ellen's outfits with a fresh new pair of earrings. The Neil Lane jewelry box is opened out for the camera. Thank you very much, Mr. Lane. Have we talked about the Diamond Demon before, Max? I think maybe
we
have.
The Diamond Demon.
That's what he's known as in certain
circles.
Oh,
I've never heard of this before. Neil Lane.
Neil Lane. He is the official jeweler of the Bachelor franchise in America. He has
since the first season?
Not since the first season. I think it crops up around 2009-ish, 2008-ish, something around right, there.
Okay. Yeah, no, but I ever have since no idea there, who this man is.
He, I mean, he is a jeweler. He has long been a jeweler to the stars, and people, celebrities wear his pieces and stuff like that. But he is most known to me and to many others as the person to whom every lead goes, usually during the like final episode. And Neil Lane will have a box of different diamond rings, and they will have to choose based on what they think. You know, it's always a man, obviously, because we love the patriarchy. And the man will go, what kind of ring do I think the Bachelorette would want? Or what kind of ring, what ring will I choose that best resembles the woman I'm going to pick, whose identity I will not share with you yet, but I will say, oh, well, she strikes me as a princess cut, or like, you know, whatever, right?
Uh-huh. I'm reading here that he did the wedding bands for Rachel Lindsay, who, of course, we remember for her season as the Bachelorette with the contestant Wah Boom.
That's right. Yes.
I think about Wah Boom sometimes.
Isn't it funny? That was because, so Wah Boom, we talked about at the time, I think, he chewed up a lot of airtime on night one of the first season that The Bachelor ever had with a person of color in the lead, and we were mostly focusing on a guy who decided to have an annoying catchphrase. Really good.
Love him. Hope Waboom's well.
We hope nothing.
Bring Waboom to paradise.
Look, would it kill him? Honestly,
I can remember Waboom that name shit is Lucas.
Right out of that lady. So they stroll down the hill. And moments later,
Wah-boom, if you will.
Wah-boom. Max, Max's new game, I've sensed this building over the last little while. Your new game is trying to be the person who says the thing that's the episode title. I wonder if we went through all of our past episodes and figured out, like, between you, me, and the guest. Because I think we like to give it to the guest where possible. And more often than not, the guest is much funnier than us and says something really good. But I wonder to whom we could attribute them. That might be a fun piece of data. Sadly, I'm the only person deranged enough to do that.
Listeners, get in touch.
I guess so. I mean,
we could take on an intern. A quintern.
A quintern. That's cute. Look, he's doing it again. He wants it so bad. So moments later, they are up in the sky in a hot air balloon. Gary offers Ellen a rose and he is ITMing, she could be the one that I spend the rest of my life with. And they kiss up in the sky and Ellen says she feels like it's not just a spark. She feels like she's the fire in the balloon or something. Hard to say.
She's being electrocuted.
Yeah, she feels like she is gassy and hot. I don't know. It's crazy how quick all of this is. I know I'm saying this a lot, but like this date in particular has two distinct locations, and we go from limos to kissing at golden hour in the span of 2 on-screen minutes.
Isn't it wild?
And like, and then it ends. Like, if there was a night portion, we didn't see it. I feel like this must be one of the shortest single dates I've ever seen.
What does that say to you about Ellen's enduring relevance for this season?
I think this is if I were to guess, it feels like the editors and producers of the show are comfortable enough that we believe Ellen to be a front runner that they don't need to reinforce that with too much like airtime.
I think that makes sense. It felt a bit yada yada to me, but maybe she's just so cemented in my mind as someone who's going to be at the end that this doesn't matter, and the show is in a coded way saying to you, you also know that this doesn't matter.
Mm. But I see what you mean, though, because it could also be evidence for the contrary, that they're like, yeah, this went well enough for her to stick around, but there wasn't much actually going on this date, you know? Like,
yeah, it could have also been boring.
Yeah, we got the best moments, but, you know, is this really as passionate as the metaphor would seem to imply? Perhaps not.
Mm.
My gut leans towards the former, though. Back at the mansion now, we get this segment that features some kind of sweaty production. Maybe the first time that I've really been like, okay, I can see the cogs turning here. I can see you're trying to do something, you know? The gist of it, as we're meant to interpret it, is that Teresa is insecure that she is not safe going into this rose ceremony. She had the luxury of a rose last week, this week she's a bit nervous about it, which already is like, okay, no big deal. Like, you know, this is how everyone else feels, but whatever. But in the process of working through these feelings, she is speaking them out loud and making women who are clearly a bit less safe than her feel bad.
Yes.
Which in itself is a fine story thread. I just feel like the footage isn't quite there. So a lot of it is off face. We're hearing Teresa's voice, but only seeing the back of her head. Or it's told to us in ITMs after the fact. So Teresa is telling Kathy about how good their date was the previous week. And she seems to be going on and on about it. And then Kathy in ITM says, I think she thinks she's got this. And then we see Kathy telling Teresa and sexy dancer Leslie, when you two get a rose tonight, if I don't, I'm taking it because possession's 9/10 of the law. Gary, I'm staying. And like, I was kind of chuckling. You can tell she's kidding when she says that. It's the type of thing you would say as a joke. And it's presented in this context after that footage that we just saw and with some kind of tense music over it. It seems kind of spiteful in a way that I didn't really think that it authentically was. I wonder if you felt the same way.
She's been taken out of context. I think that the context here is that there's an anxious older lady, and it's being my read on Teresa is that she might be an anxious older lady who might struggle a little bit to read the room. Is it Kathy in particular feel quite uncomfortable?
Yes. Yeah.
But at the same time, I also feel like the context here is being made out or is being minimized for the sake of a beat up on the behalf of the show.
I also see why they do that, because we have had two episodes that are almost completely drama free. And this is kind of the first time that a traditional kind of feeling drama thread has presented itself. So I'm like, yes, you should take that, you know?
And to that end, it does need to feel like The Bachelor.
Yes, exactly. But then we see her get emotional. She stands up and she leaves a group of women that she's chatting with and walks off camera, and we cut to commercial, and that felt a little bit false.
Yeah.
But at the cocktail party, it is evident that this has at least been a minor topic of conversation. This is not something that was completely concocted in the edit bay. The women are all gathered on couches, and April tells the group, if there is an intimate moment with somebody, I think the only way to handle it is with dignity and respect for him and you, and to keep your mouth shut. And this isn't seemingly directed at anybody in particular, although we get ITMs from Teresa where she feels like the blame is being pointed at her, which is also believable. Like, I feel like she would feel that way, even though I don't think
because she's the one person who's been on a date who's not Joan who has left.
Right, right. So, meanwhile, we see Gary chatting about road trips with Faith, who got the first impression rose. Faith imagines taking a trip and stopping at a cafe in the middle of nowhere with Gary, to which he says, you are such a romantic. And she says, I'm sappy, I know. Is it so unappealing? Which I love. I love the way she said that. I don't know why.
Yeah, she's really saving Faith.
Yeah, just restored my faith in her chances for sure. And he replies, no, back when I rode a motorcycle, I'd flip a coin in the morning. Which direction am I going, east or west? And they agree that this impulsiveness makes them a good fit. You can feel there's chemistry building. They share a kiss. Maybe Faith wins.
I really like this. I think that Faith seems like the sort of person who might bring Gary a little bit out of his shell. Which is not to suggest that Gary is a fuddy-duddy, but he's definitely like a 72-year-old man. And Faith has a bit of that energy that is a bit like, in the same way that Leslie does, a bit go-getter-ish.
Yeah, I agree. I wonder if as we draw closer to finale, this will become more of a story thread of this thing, which often gets brought up in the final weeks of a Bachelor series, but will become so recontextualized by the ages of people involved, which is this, like, do I want to go for the thing that's comfortable, you know, or the thing that's safe or whatever, or the thing that will, you know, and often that comes down to this very Madonna whore sort of like, I am slut shaming one of these women and the other woman I have decided is just a dowdy old maid or whatever, you know.
Right. Yes.
To simplify things a little too much or whatever. But I think within this context, it will be interesting if what we come down to is Gary choosing between the types of people, as you say, like Faith and like Sexy Dancer Leslie, who sort of make him come alive and make him explore things about the possibility of the rest of his life that he might not have otherwise, or whether he wants to, you know, he's in his mid, you know, early to mid 70s already, and maybe he wants to just like find the most loving, comfortable, warm embrace or whatever, you know?
Exactly. It'll come down to, do I want to go on adventures with Faith, or do I want to move in and live on the river with Ellen and see out the rest of our days? You know what I mean?
Yes. It's really funny. Teresa takes Every Month is April aside and asks if she was talking about her earlier. And April says, well, you should probably talk to Kathy because she was just speaking on her behalf. Meanwhile, Kathy is with Gary, showing him old family photos, getting emotional and crying in his arms. And she tells Gary it's been a rough day, and he asks what's going on. And in about the gentlest dibber-dobbing I've ever seen in this show,
yes,
she says, the last 24 hours or so, I've had a lot of meanness, which is like so removed. You know, it's like, it's almost like she's saying she's been mean. You know,
right,
it's like,
right.
It's like when you read a newspaper headline and it's like, a bomb has fallen on this place or whatever. It's like, it fell? Did no one drop it? And she says, it's just people aren't necessarily very nice. And I'm like, you cannot go throwing around accusations like that. You're going to get in so much trouble.
Some big words, Kathy. Yeah,
picture the big like dubstep bass they put in the background of like Ariba's villain edit on Loki season here or whatever.
Yeah.
Do you remember like whenever somebody says something like this, they're like... By the way, just so you know, I actually did that with my mouth. That wasn't like Max didn't edit in like a dubstep actual bass drop from like Skrillex or one of the masters like Skrillex or whatever.
Yeah,
one
yeah,
of the
like Skrillex.
Real heads like Skrillex or all the other guys too. Like,
any of the other dubstep guys.
Yeah. Like the guy from that band Skrillex was in.
From First to Last.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Gary says, you know, you're an incredibly positive and upbeat person. To hear this from you is a very loud voice, so I want to hear about what's going on. There is nobody like Gary.
Great digging from Gary. I thought this was masterful.
Really good, yes, because it does, it still comes off as empathetic. It has his, like, sort of very gently peculiar sort of wording, like folksiness or whatever. But also he is still doing that, you know, on the spot producing that a lead can do.
Oh, he's doing what's required of him, absolutely.
Yeah.
In the way that she's doing the lightest dibber-dobbing,
yes,
he's doing the lightest name and shame.
Right. So Kathy says, well, she's just trying to keep it together. And Gary says, is there someone in particular I need to keep an eye out for? And again, like all the producers watching along from the control room are probably like leaning forward in their chairs.
Mm-hmm.
But Kathy doesn't take the bait. She's smarter than that. She says, I think that sometimes what you initially see is not what is, and I don't want to make a mistake, and I don't want you to make a mistake. My biggest goal is for you to be happy. And this is so here for the right reasons. It's so I'm not getting involved. It's so like, there is a storyline here, and I'm progressing the storyline, but I'm not getting my hands dirty. Gary clearly
really
likes this.
Masterfully played. Yeah.
I thought this was so good. He steps away to retrieve a rose for her, which she accepts with tears of joy. And that also, it doesn't feel like as much as we're praising the like gameplay, quote unquote, here or whatever, this doesn't feel calculated. Like when she receives the rose, it does seem like it's a surprise, a really pleasant surprise to her. And she feels like validated by it.
I'm not in on Kathy.
How do you mean?
I just didn't like this. I feel like as much as she wasn't dobbing, she was still dobbing.
Right.
And dibber-dobbers wear nappies. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's just something about Cassie that I feel like she forms the coalition at the start of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
She appears to be part of, like, there's a bit of mean girl maybe to her that feels to me like Pot Kettle.
Maybe it's just the fact that I'm finding her funny and entertaining enough that that is not the prevailing takeaway. Actually, you know what? Okay.
No, I don't think I am.
Max, I wonder how much you will think this is a conspiracy corner type of situation. I wonder if producers may have noticed that there is just the barest sort of budding little bit of tension between Kathy and Teresa.
Uh-huh.
And Teresa is pretty obviously sticking around. But I wonder if they've been like, let's keep Kathy around to see where it's going to lead. And let's get Gary to give her a rose here so that we can have another week of this and see where the Askin thing is going to develop and see where the Kathy-Teresa thing is going to develop.
Now that you are tracking who got an intro package and who didn't, mm-hmm. can you tell me, did Kathy get an intro package?
Kathy did not get an intro package.
Then I agree with you. I'm on conspiracy corner with you.
It's getting crowded in here. I wonder if any of our listeners are joining us too. Well, Teresa takes Kathy away for a private chat, and Teresa says, so, you know, I love you. And, wow, that's the first time we've heard that on The Golden Bachelor. Wow. It seems like these guys are really going
to
end up together.
I could be getting closer to potentially falling in love with you.
Yeah. You know, I love you. And I was just surprised by what April said to me. She said that people should something like keep things or be more discreet. Kathy says, I think you and Gary have a huge connection. Here's my problem. You've made me feel. And then Teresa is immediately so apologetic and so embarrassed that she might have done something wrong that she just goes, oh, and she like continues sort of, she bursts in a way and she tries to apologize before Kathy can even really finish saying what happened.
Uh-huh.
Kathy's going, I feel like you're dismissing me and saying like, he and I are going off into the sunset. Go pack because you're going home. You've made me feel like it's a foregone conclusion. And then she has to tell Teresa to stop crying. Like, you know, like, please let me get this out. She says, I think that's the kind of stuff that sounds possessive, territorial, and get the hell out of the way. He's mine. What comes out of our mouths is our responsibility and we own it. And all throughout this, Teresa seems like just so stressed out just to be accused. She's putting her head in her hands. She says, oh my God, I didn't think. I'm so sorry. I feel horrible.
Yeah.
It's just really interesting stuff. Like this dynamic, I wonder how you felt. I related to Teresa quite a lot here.
Me too.
Because, yeah, I feel like you and I may both have this in common, which is like, as a people pleaser, as someone who never wants to upset anybody for any reason, it can be so mortifying to learn that that's what's happened, that you've accidentally hurt
someone. Oh, the thought
that
you have done it unknowingly to someone?
Yeah.
Crushing.
Right.
And, like, I get that from my dad, and I know that I do, and it's hearing someone out and letting someone explain how they have hurt you is a skill, and I don't think it's one that, Kathy, or rather...
Teresa.
I don't think it's one that Teresa has harnessed because whether it is as a mechanism of defense or because you enter panic and embarrassment and shame yourself, sometimes it's like you can't apologize fast enough for what you might have done. But what I suppose is important in that moment is if you are feeling that sense of shame is to sit and to evaluate what's being said before reflexing with apology. It's something that I think about in my own life because I'm sorry sometimes means forgive me.
Exactly.
At this point, Teresa doesn't know what even she's asking for forgiveness for, but that instinct is so honed that she's saying, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Forgive me, forgive me, forgive me.
Yeah.
Without even, in this case, letting Kathy explain herself. And you can see that Kathy grows more irate through the conversation. And while I don't know that for Kathy's part, she is, if I were to referee this conversation, while I don't know that her claims are necessarily in touch with what I would, I don't know.
I felt is
show reality.
Yeah, I just felt like it was tough to see through the editing and through what we're shown here to see exactly how seriously we should be taking all of this. But yeah, I agree with you that like it's one of those really tough lessons to learn that you don't necessarily immediately deserve the luxury of forgiveness just because you feel bad about it, you know? You actually, what the other person is looking for most of the time, obviously it's different in different situations and that kind of thing, but what they're looking for
circumstances may vary.
Is a willingness to realize what the problem is, some level of empathy and hopefully some way of making things different as well.
Right, exactly that. And it feels like two people who don't quite know how to have an argument or who, at the very least, who's arguing styles or conversation styles are extremely different. And while I don't doubt that Kathy did feel that way, and that Teresa did feel that way in the same way, both of them in this situation, I think, could have handled it much better.
Yeah. So Teresa leaves the room. We see her. We sort of glimpse her in her bedroom crying through a crack in the door. She's being comforted by Faith. And Kathy tells the other women now she feels bad that she's upset Teresa, which of course can happen. And then Gary overhears or, you know, gets pointed in that direction by producers who have been watching. And so she joins Faith and Teresa in their bedroom. Gary takes Teresa's hands, asks her to take a deep breath, and has her explain. She says, apparently everybody thinks I've been boasting about my connection with you. And Gary ITMs, I can't believe it was Teresa. Having had a one-on-one date with her, I found her to be very tender-hearted. Another nice just choice of adjective. And he tells her, if you don't feel you're boastful or that you did anything to hurt someone, you should let it go.
That's the other part of this. He's so right in this moment where, look, Teresa, whether or not she was boastful, whether or not she was aware, what Jerry or Gary is saying is like, take a second to assess this. Pause. And as much as maybe Gary needs someone like Faith to push him into exciting new circumstances.
Yeah.
Maybe Teresa needs someone with the patience of Gary and the perspective of Gary to be able to help her handle situations like this where she has fallen into an emotional, reflexive panic.
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting actually because the first time I watched this sequence, I wasn't really on Gary's side. I thought he was being I wouldn't say maybe dismissive, but I just thought like, I don't know if that feedback is bulletproof that like, as long as you don't think you did something wrong, then there's no problem. But that's not really what he's saying. I think what he's saying is like, the problem is becoming worse by your, by how much it's affecting you, you know? And like what you really need to do is take some space and, consider things from her point of view. And yeah.
And he's also giving her the impression, like what she takes away from this conversation still is, I stand by you.
Right. That's right. Yeah, exactly.
There's no part of this that is, I'm questioning you. It's, I stand by you.
Yeah, it's so also, it's he's giving this. Her permission to drop it because what's most important, of course, is her relationship with him. And so, you know, let's not get caught up in it. Everyone's going to be okay.
Yeah.
So we head directly into the rose ceremony. And I think like maybe some of the drama that we saw in this episode, and there was some drama, but it was a little bit higgledy-piggledy. I think maybe just slightly with the editing or whatever. I think also it partly didn't quite lock into place for me because it doesn't really have any impact on this rose ceremony. But what we're doing is we're planting seeds, you know? We've now got quite a different perspective on Teresa than we had a week ago. We're thinking about Kathy a lot more than we were before, and I think that's going to continue to pay off in the episodes to come.
Yeah.
But for now, Gary says, "Ladies, it's been quite a week. There's been some exceptionally good highs, and there's been some real unfortunate lows. And so, as time is passing, we need to keep hope in the journey and the process we're all going through. So with that being said, it's time to begin the rose ceremony." This is not his best work. No. And in fact, if I can, we're already in the corner a little bit. I would like to suggest that some Bachelor producer maybe just made this up on the fly for him.
I think someone wrote this for him too.
Like, this sounds so much like other speeches we have heard from other leads at this exact point in time.
Absolutely.
Of like, yes, well,
someone is feeding him words.
Yeah, this episode had good parts and bad parts and, you know, whatever. But at the end of the day, we're all here for love or whatever.
Oh my
you know?
Goodness. It feels like the end of a Bear in the Big Blue House episode or something like that. You know what totally. I mean? Like, well, kids, we really learned something today.
Yeah, the moral of this episode is whatever.
This episode was brought to you by the letter.
Yeah. Anyway, Ellen and Kathy are safe and the remaining roses go out in this order. First impression, Faith, Sandra from Atlanta, sexy dancer Leslie, Nancy who owes the Hulk, Susan Jenner, every month is April, and finally, Teresa. I still don't really have a great Teresa name. We all know Teresa is, but I'm like, maybe that's why I can't reduce her to one thing.
Yeah, Teresa, I hardly know her.
That's pretty good. Maybe I'll use that. That's great.
There it is.
So Arskin lives on for at least one more week, which is good because by this point in the episode, I had completely forgotten that that was in the first part.
Yeah.
They did not capitalize on that at all. I'm sure there's more of it to come. And instead, it is farewell to beautiful Edith from Downey Jr., California.
Oh, yes.
She had the first limo exit and a couple of ITMs, but not a lot more than that. Didn't really connect. I thought she was going to be a bigger deal.
Didn't register for me.
No, not so much. We also wish a very fond adieu to Christina. She of the truly iconic one-letter Instagram bio.
Oh, my God. Yes, our friend.
Pouring the numeral one out for her, which I should add, she has now changed her bio again to, quote, was a contestant on the ABC show Golden Bachelor. I thought maybe we'd go back to, perhaps not yet. Neither of these women get to narrate or say anything on their way out. Instead, we linger on Kathy and Teresa, who naturally, as you would, stood right next to each other at the bleachers. Teresa extends an olive branch to Kathy, asking, "Did you have a really nice time with him?" To which Kathy replies, "I mean, I was mostly crying, but yeah, you know, he's such a great guy. So intuitive." And Teresa, agreeing, says, "Yeah, he came up to me and said the most wonderful thing. He came up to where I was bawling my eyes out in the bedroom." And Kathy says, "He came up to your bedroom?" Teresa, that's the kind of stuff you need to keep to yourself. And in ITM, she says, "I really think Teresa had no clue. I run my mouth all the time, as we all know, but also I'm intuitive. And I'm like, is anybody else seeing this?"
Yeah, she's right.
She's right. And she says, "I think Teresa is a nice person. I can't figure out if she's as dumb as a rock or she knows exactly what she's doing."
I think that Teresa has poor social awareness. That's where I'm at with this.
Yeah,
doesn't feel calculated.
No, it doesn't feel calculated. It's such perfect narrative timing that this comes up exactly when it does. Like, that she is like, "Phew, we finally all moved past it. We got through the rose ceremony. Everyone's still here. We're going to set aside our differences. And we're now bonding over how much we both like Gary. And by the way, here's a thing Gary did just for me."
Just
very good.
Unbelievable lack of awareness from Teresa. It makes me confident that I don't think she's going to win, and I also don't think Kathy's going to win.
Yeah, yeah. This is so funny because, like, you deeply relate to these people, and it's the exact kind of thing that I can imagine happening. It's like, this is why I always say I wouldn't wish going on a reality show on my worst enemy or whatever, because, like,
oh my God, yeah.
Even though you can approach this with, like, the most open heart, you know, you can be the sweetest, you know. I mean, I'm sure Teresa has got faults or whatever, but, you know, like, with all of the best intentions, there's still going to be misinterpretation, or the pressure will present itself in ways you couldn't have predicted or whatever. Teresa, ITMs, Kathy's a good person. I'm a good person. We're all good people here. So I hope we can be good friends again, which is like, yeah, it's again, it's just like this, perfectly pure, good sentiment, but also just this dash of naivety.
Yeah.
You know, that,
which
that
would
you're
be
just
so
like,
hard to take. Like,
right.
As much as I have said, I'm not in on Kathy. I don't like this because I do think that she could have handled this much better, and that I relate to Teresa's impulse.
Mm.
Fuck, this would be hard to handle.
Yeah, and I can also really easily see myself handling it exactly how Kathy has, of just being listen, you need to stop. Like, I'm putting my foot down. Like, you know, you're making things uncomfortable for me and for other people. You know,
you have no idea that you're doing it.
Right.
Like, and that is the hard thing.
Right. It's particularly frustrating because it's kind of like when you get out of a relationship with somebody who you still have a great deal of affection towards, but it's like the relationship was not the right thing anymore or whatever, right?
Sure.
Where it's like, it would be so much easier to be mad at you and to, you know, have been brutally dumped, or to have brutally dumped you and to just have a clean break or whatever. But instead, like,
it doesn't quite happen like that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we know each other as people, and, you know, we have to work our way out through this, you know?
Yes. Yeah. It's a difficult thing. In this instance, Kathy doesn't owe Teresa anything except,
Well, Nancy owes...
I suppose maybe she owes her a small amount of kindness or whatever, but, like... If your patience is worn so thin, this becomes a great reality TV storyline because there's one woman who's completely out of patience and there's one woman who has no idea. Like, cat, Brian, who we talked about earlier, very talented.
Yeah.
One of his talents is going on the kitchen bench.
Oh, yes, I've noticed
that. Which I encourage him not to do.
Yeah.
Every day. I say, Brian, don't do, please. But God love him.
Yeah, yeah.
He'll be on that bench.
Yeah, it's an immovable object. It's a whatever. Can God create a soup so hot?
It's an immovable object meets a negotiable force or something like that.
I don't know. Yeah, something like that. So next week, it looks like we're getting the pickleball group date of our dreams. But then somebody has a fall and injures their ankle. Could be
like
extremely high stakes.
Am I right?
Sexy dancer Leslie drives an ATV. Ellen maybe says, I'm falling in love with you, Gary. It seems high stakes next week. I'm very curious. And then once again, I am tickled by the stinger, which it sounds like it's a phrase that sounds funny to me. I didn't mean it. In a funny way, but it's just funny. Kathy is getting her hair done by Susan and says, if things don't work out with Gary, I'm going home with Susan. If you stop farting, it's torture sitting here. I have a first row seat to your gas. And Susan blames Edith because Edith makes such good guacamole. And Kathy says, you made meatballs. Is it possible your gas is coming from them? We've set up. There's a lot of a garlic and onion and peppers and stuff going on here. And Susan says, no, it's the guacamole because I don't eat that all the time. Clearly Susan's on a, you know, meatball rich diet.
Right.
Kathy says, well, you can't prove it by me. And then Nancy Holkower swoops in from the next room with a fucking 3-point shot. She opens up the window and sort of collapses onto the windowsill, stares Susan right in the face and says, you guys, it was definitely the meatballs. It's so good. That's so funny. We're having fun with toilet humor on The Bachelor.
It's great. Between this and Dr. Pooh Baby, we are in heaven.
Absolutely. Pretty solid week, I think.
And that is going to wrap up a solid week here on The Bachelor of Hearts podcast. Xavi, thank you to you for being here. Thank you to me for being here. And listener, guess what?
Wait. I would also like to say thank you to myself. I would like to say thank you to my friend Max Quinn.
Uh-huh.
I would like to say,
what do you have to say to listener?
Thank you to the Zave Heads. I would like to say thank you to the members of Max Nation.
What up?
I would like to say Thank you to the Bug Dicks, who find yep. themselves unaffiliated, or perhaps members of both camps. I would like to say thank you to anyone who doesn't understand what any of those things are. And I would like to say, more broadly, to our listeners... Oh, wait. Go and find us on social media at BUH Pod. Join our Facebook community. It's a group. It's called Bachelor of Hearts Osh Posting. We will be back with another episode before too long.
Listeners.
I thought maybe you'd harmonize. We love you.
Goodbye!
Goodbye! Doing what's before me, searching for a sign.